Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Today we celebrate a milestone, the 100th episode of Papercast Base by Base. This is a significant moment in our journey, and we want to thank you, our listeners, for being part of this story. Your support, curiosity, and passion for science have brought us here, and we are honored to share this achievement with you. Now let's dive right into a really big challenge in medicine today. You know, think about a disease like acute myeloid leukemia, AML. It's complex. It changes fast. How does a doctor even make a truly precise diagnosis for something like that? How can they predict what's going to happen to that patient? And maybe more fundamentally, why is it still so difficult to get the full picture of a patient's cancer? Mm-hmm. Even with all the fancy genetic tests we have now, what if we could look beyond the DNA sequence, get a deeper layer of understanding, and maybe do it faster?
Yeah, those are exactly the core questions, aren't they? AML, it's just known for being so heterogeneous.
Meaning it just looks completely different from one person to the next.
Exactly. It presents so differently, patient to patient. And that makes consistent diagnosis and consistent treatment really, really tough.
Yeah.
Our traditional methods, well, they often just don't capture that full complexity. It leaves gaps, you know?
Like trying to see the whole picture through a keyhole?
Something like that, yeah. A really complex picture.
Okay, and before we really get into the weeds of the science, it feels important to mention this wasn't just one lab working in isolation, right? This sounds like a massive undertaking.
Oh, absolutely. It's crucial to recognize that. This deep dive, it really celebrates the work of a huge international team. It was led by researchers at the University of Florida, specifically the College of Pharmacy and the UF Health Cancer Center. But they collaborated closely with places like St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, MIT, Uppsala University in Sweden, and, well, many others. A really big group effort.
Wow.
And it's this kind of large-scale collaboration that's really pushed things forward, particularly in applying epigenomics to AML in a clinical context.
So let's paint the picture of AML itself for a moment.
Yeah.
It's a really tough disease, right? High morbidity, high mortality.
Devastating, really, despite, you know, decades of research trying to understand it better. A key problem has always been the complexity of the leukemic stem cells.
Those are the cells driving the disease.
Exactly. They're tricky, hard to target, and translating what we learn about them into actual effective clinical care, that's been a monumental challenge.
And this study brings in something called epigenomic integrity. What does that mean in this context?
Right. So think of your DNA as the instruction book. Epigenomics is like the layer of notes and highlights on top, telling cells which instructions to read and when without changing the actual text.
Okay, like annotations.
Precisely. And in AML, the system of annotations, the epigenomic integrity, it often gets messed up, compromised. This happens in both young and older patients. So it really warrants looking at the whole epigenome, not just bits and pieces.
Because current guidelines mostly look at the DNA text itself, the mutations.
Largely, yes. Current guidelines rely on a sort of selective list of specific DNA changes or lesions. And while those are important, they often miss the bigger picture, that heterogeneity we talked about.
It doesn't capture the full variability.
Exactly. And this is where DNA methylation comes in. It's a key epigenetic mark, like one of those sticky notes. It's known to be super important in how AML cells grow and whether they mature or differentiate. But actually using methylation analysis in the clinic,
difficult.
Very. Mainly because we lacked the technology tools that were feasible, fast, and, you know, affordable enough for routine use. Plus, there's this information overload problem. You run these analyses, you get tons of data.
Right.
And a lot of it ends up being variants of unknown significance. You see a difference, but you don't know if it actually means anything clinically.
So it's hard to see the important signals through all the noise.
Exactly. And that's where machine learning comes in. It's really promising for finding those hidden patterns and all that complex data. We're actually seeing this approach gain traction. The WHO, for instance, is already recommending classification systems based on machine learning for other cancers, like brain tumors.
Right.
So there's a precedent.
Okay. That makes sense. So facing this huge challenge, the complexity, the data overload, the need for speed, how did this massive team tackle it? What was their strategy?
Well, it was a really robust, multi-pronged approach. First off, data harmonization. This was huge. They gathered DNA methylation data from, get this, over 3,300 leukemia patient samples.
Wow, 3,300.
Yep. And not just from one place, but from 11 different clinical trials and studies.
Yeah.
They had to make all this diverse data comparable, harmonize it. One of the largest cohorts ever looked at this way.
That sounds like a massive data integration challenge in itself.
It absolutely was. Then, using this harmonized data, they built the Acute Leukemia Methylome Atlas, LMA. They use an algorithm called PACMAP. Think of it like a really smart map maker for high-dimensional data.
Yeah.
It took methylation values from over 330,000 specific spots on the DNA, the CpG sites, and basically compressed that complexity. It boiled it down into just two dimensions so you could actually see the patterns, like on a map, and five dimensions for their classification models.
So samples that were similar epigenetically would just naturally cluster together on this map.
Exactly. You could literally see different types of leukemia forming distinct groups.
That's really cool. So they have this map. What do they do with it?
They built machine learning models on top of it. The first was ALMA subtype. This one uses those five PACMAP coordinates to predict which of the 27 WHO-defined AML subtypes a sample belongs to. Plus, it could identify normal samples, so a diagnostic tool.
Okay, diagnosis. What else?
They also built AML epigenomic risk. Similar idea, using the five ALMA coordinates, but this model predicts prognosis specifically, the probability of death within 5 years.
So not just what it is, but how aggressive it might be.
Precisely. And then for practicality, they also developed a more concise model, the 38 CpG AML signature. They did a big study across the whole epigenome to find markers linked to survival, narrowed it down from 200 to just 38 key CpG sites.
So much smaller, maybe easier to implement signature.
Exactly. Yeah. Potentially more practical in some settings, but still capturing that crucial prognostic information.
But none of this matters clinically if you can't get the data from a patient sample quickly, right? How did they bridge that gap?
Right, the clinical utility piece. They developed a specimen-to-result protocol using rapid, long-read nanopore sequencing. This is really cutting-edge stuff.
Nanopore sequencing.
Yeah.
That lets you read long DNA strands.
Yes. And crucially, it allows you to detect the methylation marks directly on the DNA, natively, without extra chemical steps, and you can sequence the whole genome and epigenome at the same time.
And it's fast.
Incredibly fast. They got it down to about 2 hours from getting the sample to starting the sequencing, and the data processing, base calling, methylation calling, alignment, usually done within 48 hours.
2 hours from sample to sequencer.
That's, yeah. Wow, okay. It's a massive speed up compared to older methods.
Okay, the scale, the machine learning, this rapid sequencing,
yeah,
it's seriously impressive.
Mm.
So the moment of truth. What did they actually find? Did it work?
It really did. The results were quite striking. First, ALMA created a remarkably clear map of all this blood cell diversity. You could clearly see distinct clusters for AML subtypes, ALL, MDS, APL, and normal cells. It gave a visual structure to the disease landscape based purely on epigenomics.
So it organizes the chaos, basically.
In a way, yes. And the ALMA subtype model was highly accurate. It achieved perfect agreement, 1.00 concordance for 16 different subtypes in their main data set. Even in independent test groups, the accuracy was very high, like 0.98 for a common type of AML.
That sounds really good.
But here's maybe the most impactful part. It could assign a clear diagnosis to hundreds of samples, 840 in one set, 96 in another, that previously had vague or inconclusive descriptions.
So patients who were kind of in diagnostic limbo before?
Exactly. Samples labeled just normal karyotype or with unclear morphology. ALM could often pinpoint the specific WHO subtype based on the epigenome. That's huge for guiding treatment.
Definitely. What about the risk prediction model?
The AML epigenomic risk model also performed very well. It accurately predicted 5-year survival, both overall and event-free survival. Patients flagged as AML epigenomic risk high has significantly worse outcomes. We're talking hazard ratios of like 4.4 in kids and around 1.7 to 2.0 in adult cohorts like TCGA and BEAT AML.
And that held up even when accounting for other known risk factors.
Yes, it remained an independent predictor even after adjusting for things like minimal residual disease, FLT3 status, age. It added unique prognostic information.
Okay, and the simpler 38 CpG signature, how did that little guy do?
It held its own remarkably well. The 38 CpG signature was also a highly significant predictor of survival with predictive power comparable to the bigger ALMA risk model.
So a potentially more efficient option that still delivers.
Seems so. And reassuringly, many of those 38 CpGs were located in or near genes already known to be players in blood cancers, like TRF7, CD93, EXT1. It adds biological plausibility.
Makes sense. And the clinical validation using the rapid nanopore sequencing, did that work in real patient samples?
Yes, that was a key success. They tested it on 20 patient samples. The epigenomic predictions lined up really well with known genetic drivers found through other mean-specific gene fusions, NPM1 mutations, things like that. It could even correctly identify remission status sometimes. And importantly, results were consistent whether they used peripheral blood or bone marrow aspirate.
That consistency is crucial for practical use. So how do these new epigenomic approaches compare to what's currently used? Are they actually better?
That's the bottom line, right? And yes, the findings suggest they are. Both epigenomic models significantly improved risk classification compared to current standard of care methods. They also provided additional predictive value beyond existing RNA-based signatures. So it seems to offer a real advantage.
Okay, this sounds really promising. So what does this all mean? For patients, for doctors, for how we think about AML moving forward?
Well, the big implication is that this strongly supports bringing epigenomic profiling into routine clinical practice for hematology and oncology. It really opens doors for more personalized medicine, better trial designs, more tailored treatments, especially for that group of patients with sort of ambiguous standard risk. They could benefit hugely.
And the speed factor you mentioned.
The speed and potential for lower costs with the nanopore protocol is a massive deal. That 2-hour sample to sequencer time, that could revolutionize how quickly decisions are made. It makes advanced diagnostics potentially more accessible globally.
Faster answers, potentially more targeted treatment starting sooner. That's a clear benefit.
Definitely. And biologically, it suggests that even different kinds of genetic hits, mutations, big rearrangements leave distinct readable footprints on the epigenome. We can identify the disease state very clearly at that layer.
Fascinating. But like all studies, there must be limitations, right? Or areas needing more work.
Absolutely. It's important to be realistic. The models, while powerful, did struggle a bit with very rare subtypes or subtypes that weren't well represented in the initial massive training data set.
Like specific rare gene fusions or AML in patients with Down syndrome.
Exactly, those kinds of cases. Sometimes they were misclassified. So there's a clear and urgent need for more publicly available methylation data from these rarer patient groups to make the models even better and more generalizable.
Makes sense. You need enough examples to train the AI properly.
Right. And while low-pass sequencing is sometimes okay, accuracy can drop for those rare types. So robust training data is key, maybe alongside standard genomic tests as backup. Also, cost is still a factor. While nanopore is improving, whole genome sequencing isn't exactly cheap yet for every clinic. We need continued innovation there.
More data, refining for rare cases cost, standard challenges in genomics, it sounds like.
Pretty much. And more work is needed to figure out the minimum amount of leukemia cells needed for reliable results with this long-read sequencing and to keep exploring other genetic markers.
Okay. And you mentioned the researchers made their tools available.
Yes. And that's fantastic. They released ALMA as an open source toolkit. There's a web app, a Python package. They're making it accessible.
That fosters collaboration, lets others build on it.
Exactly. It's a commitment to open science, which is crucial for moving the field forward quickly.
So wrapping this up, it feels like this deep dive shows a really revolutionary path forward for AML. Using epigenomics, big data, smart algorithms, fast sequencing. It's offering a level of diagnostic clarity and prognostic insight we haven't really had before.
I think that's fair to say.
It really feels like a significant step towards making cancer diagnosis faster, much more precise, and genuinely personalized.
It certainly points in that direction, and it leaves us with a really interesting question to ponder, doesn't it?
Which is?
Well, what does this success mean for integrating all sorts of omic data, genomics, epigenomics, transcriptomics, proteomics into everyday clinical care? And could these kinds of epigenomic mapping strategies work for other complex diseases, helping us unravel their mysteries too?
Lots to think about. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.